These guys have earnings coming up next week. And
the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean, we got a deep group.
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
And here we are. Welcome now to Tuesday afternoon in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. You heard John Najarian's voice. He is waiting in the wings. We'll talk to him about what's going on Wall Street today. A little later in the program, Kelly Leonard will be here. I went to high school with Kelly O'Connor. I'd be shocked if she showed up. Kelly Leonard will be here. You know, he's the host of the podcast Getting to Yes and his guest in this week's edition is Keiko Ajina. I'm not sure I pronounced that correctly, but she's the actress who played Lane in The Gilmore Girls, and she has a book out called Make No Mistakes, some interesting ideas from Keiko. So we will talk to Kelly about that a little bit later. Right now on the phone line, John Najarian. You just saw him on the Halftime Report on CNBC. He has shed all of his TV gear, and he joins us now on the radio. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Great to be with you, Stephen. Thank you, sir.
So really, what's the highlight of your day? Is it just appearing before millions on CNBC, or is it this little Tuesday afternoon visit with me?
It's this visit with you as well as having a flawless travel day. I was coming from Vermont this morning from a charity golf outing yesterday. So having to get up really early, make it to the airport, having that go well, getting here to New York in time to do this.
Yeah.
And then to join Steve Bertrand,
right,
the highlight of my day.
It's a good thing you weren't flying out of Chicago because you might have had trouble this morning. S&P cracks the 2,900 mark earlier today. I think it's down a little bit. I mean, it's up for the day, but now at 2,897, so pretty close. How significant is that? What do you make of all that?
We continue to get strong indications from both CEOs and any measure of consumer spending that consumers are pretty happy right now. DSW, of course, that's Discount Shoe Warehouse. They had just blowout earnings last night. They're going to top $3 billion for the first time in revenue, and stocks up 24% today.
Wow.
That's on the heels of Target reporting, you know, best consumer environment. Brian Cornell said last week that he has ever seen in his career as a retailer. Walmart had that big pop just before that 2 weeks ago. So I think you're seeing a very strong environment right now for consumers. That bodes well for anybody that deals with consumers. Right now, that's a lot of retailers.
It's interesting, sort of conflict. I don't know if that's the right word, but I mean, long term for shops like DSW or I guess Best Buy's off today, but Target, brick and mortar stores. The long term picture doesn't look so good, right? But short term, because consumer confidence last month was the highest in 18 years, it's really good in the short term.
Right, and an awful lot of consumers. As much as we buy on Amazon, and I say we because I'm one of those Prime members, and I'm sure you are, and I'm sure most of your listeners are. I mean, there's over 170 million Prime accounts, I believe, in America. So obviously a lot of us use that service, but there's a lot of things people need, and they can't wait. Even though Amazon can get you an awful lot same day or next day, there are things you need that you're still going to go into stores for, and now Walmart really showed people something that Amazon can't do yet, and that is when they come into the store, they give you the option when you buy it online, you want us to ship it to you, do you want to come into the store? And then people think to themselves, well, yeah, maybe I have a couple more things I need to pick up. It has boosted their sales dramatically, and that's something, like I say, that Amazon can't beat them at yet.
That's interesting. So it's like putting the magazines or the candy at the checkout counter, right? You get a couple of more items at the last minute, bring people into the store to pick up their orders, and they'll shop while they're there.
Yep, absolutely. They don't have to hit minimums to get free shipping or anything else. And they figure, well, you know, I probably got to pick up some milk or pick up this or that anyway when I'm at the store. They end up buying more than they thought, which is great for the retailer. And like I say, Walmart is really the king of that right now, followed by Target.
Larry Kudlow, the president's economic advisor, was in front of the cameras today talking about the trade arrangement, agreement in principle, I guess, with Mexico and then moving toward Canada. So there's that. And since you're the Kudlow whisperer, I've got to ask you about his comments about Google, too. You know, the president was tweeting that he thinks the Google searches are unfair to him, which, you know, I've come to expect that from the president. I was a little surprised to hear Kudlow today say that they're going to investigate that.
Yeah, well, if something makes either Fox News or the Drudge Report, the president's going to pay attention to it. And it made both of those. That was a report that nearly 100%, they went to 99 point something percent of negative articles about the president are what comes up first on the Google search.
Right.
And so the president asked a question, you know, basically saying, why is that? Why did those articles that are only negative about me come up rather than how great the economy is or how positive consumers are or any of this other stuff? And we all kind of know why, but nonetheless, the president is going to make sure that there's nothing in that Google algorithm that is causing those articles to move to the top on those searches. So we'll see if anything comes from it. I don't think it'll be a market situation.
I felt kind of bad for Kudlow because he gave the answer he had to, and I don't know if that's an answer he wanted to have to give. But all right,
yeah,
there's that.
There are times when you got to do that when you work for the president.
Right.
Especially this one.
That's what it was. Okay, so what are you looking at today? What's your tip for the day?
We actually, Warren Buffett was adding to two airlines recently. He already owned United. He added to Southwest and Delta. Today, we saw strong activity in DAL, Delta, which I already owned, so I added to it. And I like the way they're going. I don't think that fuel prices have run away from those carriers, so I think the capacity issues mean that they're going to be posting up some very good numbers. So we added for customers into Delta Airlines today.
All right, there's John Najarian. Follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. Of course, see him on CNBC and the Najarian Family Office as well. John, love talking to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Stephen. Have a great day.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. On the phone line now is Deborah Kern. She is a mortgage analyst for Bankrate.com. And, well, Deborah, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve, for having me.
What state do you live in, Deborah?
I'm actually in Denver, Colorado.
Colorado is not one of the top 10 states of people leaving, is it?
Not on our list, but anecdotally, I know many people who are leaving because it's so expensive here.
Is that right? Really?
Yes.
And what's expensive there? The housing?
Housing, for sure. You see a lot of folks moving in, driving up home prices, and, you know, we have a great economy here, and, you know, this is the case for some of the states that are on our list. However, the problem is when you have a mix of low affordability as well as slower income and wage growth, or,
right.
I'm sorry, slower income and job growth, that can create some problems and people might be eyeing some other spots to move.
Well, tell me about these people. Who are the people who are moving from state to state? Because I think we talked not too long ago on this show about the fact that people aren't relocating for jobs as much as they used to, as far as being, you know, transferred from one office to another. So why are the people moving these days?
What we did was we asked our friends at Realtor.com to crunch some numbers. They looked at the states with the highest population losses. So, obviously, we have New York and California are the top two. Those are very high-cost states with high taxes, property and income taxes. And so they're looking at places that have a mix of more affordable housing, income and job growth, you know, to help offset some of those, you know, those high household expenses you have when you're paying more of your income for housing. So, you know, Florida was one of the standouts on this list.
Right.
It's on every outbound state list because it has that good mix of affordable housing and positive income and employment growth.
Well, thank you for only mentioning the top two states as far as exits, New York and California, because next on the list is Illinois.
Right, that's where you are.
Yeah.
There in Chicago. So,
I'm looking at a lot of these lists, you know, and what I like about this, and people should check it out, it's at Bankrate.com, is you list the top 10, but then what you also do is look at the five states the top five states where people from the exiting state are going. And often it has to do with geography. So in Illinois, most people are moving to Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri. And then come the interesting ones, Florida and Texas, as you mentioned. So Florida is the only state on all 10 of the exiting list. But so most of these people, though, are staying fairly close to home.
They are. But if you look, you know, and specifically if we want to look at Illinois, where you see them going to Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri, you know, Missouri stands out to me because more than, it looks like 52% of the median households can afford what's on the market. So, you know, Realtor.com looked at their own search data to see where people from these outbound states were looking in listings, and it, they found that it closely lined up with census data for population gains in some of these states.
Debbie, I have to tell you, the best thing about Missouri is you have to drive through it to get to Colorado and visit Denver. That's about it.
I believe that. No, I mean, I've been to St. Louis before. That's a beautiful city. But, you know, I think that, that's it's very common these days that people are now having to really rethink about where they live just because, you know, housing takes up such a huge chunk of folks' income.
And it's going to change even more, isn't it, with this new tax law?
Correct. Yeah, so what you're seeing, especially for the poor folks that live up in California or New York.
Or here in Illinois, it's going to be an impact here, too.
In Illinois, too, right? So, but the tax changes, you know, we're seeing the mortgage interest deduction amount is now being knocked down from $1 million down to $750,000. But, you know, in places like California and New York, where home prices are generally north of $750,000, that's a huge hit to folks in those areas. So, and then you also look at the deductible property and state and local impact. Income taxes being capped at $10,000. So that's another hit to those folks' wallets.
So do you think that will impact and require result in even more people moving out of states like Illinois?
I absolutely think so for some of the states that are on this list, including Illinois. I think you're just going to see people looking for that good mix of more affordability, you know, lowering their tax burden, also, you know, in search of better jobs and employment growth. So, you know, the folks at Realtor.com, they said, you know, first it's housing affordability and then jobs is a very close second.
That's Deborah Kern. She's a mortgage analyst at Bankrate.com. And for some reason, she doesn't like Missouri.
But I love Colorado.
That was on me. Nice to talk to you, Deborah. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. In the studio is Jeff Rossett. He's the co-founder and CEO of VentureScale. VentureScale just announcing a partnership with 1871. Jeff, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, tell me about, because I like this idea of that you've got, you know, I'm trying to figure out the analogy of teaching nerds how to play softball or something, right? You've got these entrepreneurs at 1871 coming up with great ideas, great products, but sales might not be their forte, right? So how does it all work together?
Yeah, we don't work with nerds. No nerds. Yeah, the best of the best. So so we started VentureScale about 7 or 8 months ago, and it was kind of conceived out of a pretty defined need that we saw here in Chicago, being that Chicago has become an ecosystem that's really breeding a lot of growth in the tech space, a lot of companies that are raising money and they're growing quite nicely. What we find is while there's a lot of resources for things like developing the technology, raising capital, building infrastructure for the company overall, the main element that was lacking was resources for sales and revenue growth. So what we find is these early stage companies, they're growing, they're starting to sell their product to their first number of customers. The CEOs get stuck not knowing how to take it to the next level around building a sales strategy.
Because they are specialists in one area or another, right? They're they have to be specialists in everything.
You got it. They're either technology founders or they're industry domain experts, and they've never run and built a sales organization. And that's really where we come into play.
I saw a quote from Betsy Ziegler at 1871. She said, you know, some of these guys say writing software is easy.
Right.
But selling stuff is hard.
Right. Exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, the building the sales foundation for an early stage B2B tech company is much more a science than an art, right? So there's specific processes and things that most of these companies follow that causes them to be successful and scale, and we're really helping to build that foundation for these companies.
It's different. We're talking about something different than raising money, right? Raising capital. This is once you've got the product and figuring out a way to sell it.
Right, right.
What do you think is the
biggest obstacle to them skills-wise when it comes to this, or what do you find?
You know, what you typically see is a couple of founders that start their own B2B tech company. They could sell their product front and back. They could walk into a room with a potential buyer, and they know exactly how to pitch their product that they've built. What they struggle with is, how do you get out of the scenario where it's just the founders that are leading the sales efforts to actually acting like a CEO and building a sales organization on the side?
You got to be able to figure out how to hire people and who
to hire, how to train, how to implement the right technologies to support these folks, and all those things in between.
And the people who you hire are going to carry your message. So you're the CEO creator. You know it front to back. You've got to figure out people who can take that torch and run for you.
You got it. And especially when these companies begin to raise, you know, a healthy seed round or Series A, they have millions of dollars that are coming in the door. Now it's time to start to build that foundation. And what we typically see is, if you look back at all these tech companies that have been started, there's a lot of really successful ones here in Chicago. But for every Sprout Social or Jellyvision or Braintree, there's 100 that don't make it. And one of the reasons why is they can't build and scale.
Well, I was going to ask you that. So are there great ideas that go unfound? Because really,
every day, all the time. And you look at the success rate of venture-backed tech companies, it's minuscule. It's, you know, 5-6% of companies that actually build and launch a product that 3-5 years later, they're still in business. And there's a lot of obstacles that they have to come over.
And some of that is just that they can't. So I used to interview a lot of writers, right? Uh-huh. And I would say, and we talk about the business of book selling and marketing and all of that. And I would ask, you know, are there great books that have been written and not read? You know, or are they always found and sold? And they said, no, a lot of times great books are unread. And that's kind of what you're saying here. There are great ideas that go undeveloped because they can't be sold.
Right. Well, it's not necessarily the fact that they can't be sold. It's that the organizations can't build a process in order to effectively go to market.
They could be sold if they knew what they were doing.
Exactly. And it's tough out there. And there's a lot of competing technologies. There's companies that are getting started every single day, not only here in Chicago, but globally. And we're in this global atmosphere with B2B tech that you really have a lot of competition. And if you're not able to scale in a quick enough way, you're getting left in the dust.
So Venture Scale is a subsidiary or part of Sales Assembly, which you also created?
Right. So Sales Assembly is more or less the parent company. We work with many of the Series B and above, you know, high growth tech companies here in town, helping them just to continue to build on the momentum they've already achieved as they've continued to grow. Companies like Sprout Social, G2 Crowd, Dialogue Tech, and so on.
So the idea is the Venture Scale graduates will one day end up with Sales Assembly.
Yeah, you can look at it that way. And part of the value of going through the Venture Scale program is we do offer them a membership into Sales Assembly once they graduate. But the way that Venture Scale is structured is it's a 6-month program. We do it in a cohort format, so we choose 8 to 10 companies to go through it at once. These are all early stage B2B tech companies that have raised a little bit of capital, and it's very much classroom. So we focus on the core skills and disciplines that they need to build.
And you're just up and running on this.
So we've done one cohort in the spring. We had 9 companies go through the program, and now we're getting ready to launch our second cohort.
So I'm interested in you. What have you learned? What did you learn from them in the first cohort?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we learned a lot about, you know, how to successfully run the program overall. I think, you know, the thing that I learned the most about the actual founders that were going through the program, and we kind of came in with the mindset that a lot of these folks were going to be open and receptive to learning and to understanding, okay, how do I apply these things? But you'd be surprised as to how receptive they were to say, I've done a nice job, you know, selling my product over the last year and a half, but there's a lot that I just don't know about. And, you know, teach me, show me how to go down this path.
Jeff Rossett is the co-founder, CEO of Venture Scale. Where do people find more information?
So VentureScale.io is the website, and applications are open right now through the end of September. All of our program sessions are being held in 1871's office in the Merchandise Mart. And companies that get accepted into the program, outside of the classroom sessions, we have about 85-90 mentors that they have an opportunity to work with, and partnerships with organizations all throughout the city to really help them grow.
Jeff, it was great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, and hey, look what time it is.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Okay, this one is just too good. Many Chicagoans know that the mysterious chocolate smell that swirls through the west side of the city during various times of the day is from the historic Blommer Chocolate Company. But the owners are looking into selling the company for an estimated $500 million. Guys, a chocolate factory is literally for sale. So many Willy Wonka dreams could come true. All right, fine. Maybe they should just sell it to someone who wants to keep up production of the the fourth generation company. And companies with rich histories like that are great for the business scene. And the Midwest has plenty of them, like Farmers. But Farmers are having a tough go recently due to a disruptor in their industry, the very popular imperfect produce. The idea of selling misshapen and, well, ugly produce isn't a new one, because Community Supported Agriculture, or CSA, has been doing it for years. Imperfect produce is frankly just doing it a little bit better right now. But the new guy on the block is hitting the farmers where it hurts, right in their wallets. The next move is on you, farmers. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. All right, Kelly Leonard is in the studio. You know Kelly from Second City and the podcast, of course, Getting to Yes And. Welcome back, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about Gilmore Girls. What's this about?
Well, a little bit. So my guest this week, it just went up, is Keiko Agena. Uh-huh. So folks who are fans of the Gilmore Girls will know her as Lane.
She was the musician, right?
Yeah, Rory's best friend.
Okay.
When my daughter found out that I had the opportunity to have her on, she was like, you have to have her on. And we weren't really talking about Gilmore Girls at all. She has a new book, and it's kind of like a workbook. It's called No Mistakes, a Workbook for Imperfect Artists.
So what does an actress from the Gilmore Girls have doing writing a book for artists?
So in addition to being an actress, she is a visual artist. She draws, and she's an improviser, which is why I got interested in this. And this book is a lot like Julie Cameron's The Artist's Way, for people who know that, but kind of infused with ideas around mindfulness and improv and design thinking. So it has lots of great passages of ideas and adages, but then little like stuff you should do, drawings that you can make. And she has a great line where basically she says that justifying mistakes is how she draws. So she uses her mistakes and just goes in whatever direction they take her.
Maybe explain that to me, because I was interested in her relationship to mistakes and how she used that for them. So maybe that's the same question put two different ways.
Yeah, and it's basically sort of, and the title is a little tongue-in-cheek because it's called No Mistakes, but in fact she's sort of saying use all your mistakes,
right.
Which is a thing you learn in improvisation. You learn to see all obstacles as gifts. And she says your odd point of view, your imperfections, that those are actually your treasures. And this is something that she's picked up in not just in improvisation, but her as a visual artist and her when she's done some mindfulness training as well.
And she also talks about how you need to push yourself, but sometimes you need to allow yourself to just relax as well.
Right. There's a great Japanese proverb she has in there, which is fail 7 times, stand up 8.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's really lovely. And it's sort of like, no, you're going to fail and you're going to need to rest. Both things are true. You know, you're always going for success, but failure is there. And that's a very Eastern concept, right? Very yin and yang.
The name of the book is No Mistakes. The author is Keiko Agena.
Mm-hmm.
Step back. What'd you think? Well, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah. I always go into these books a little bit cynical because that's who I am as a person. And then I read, I'm like, this is really good. Yeah. This is really helpful. I did some of the exercises. And then as an interview, she's just a lovely human being.
Now you can hear the podcast at WGNradio.com. The podcast called Getting to Yes And. Nice to see you, Kelly.
Good to see you.